call the meeting to order. Before citizens' comments, I just want Joe to introduce somebody on the screen there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, supervisors. For those of you who don't know her, particularly those of you who might be new to the executive committee this session, Michelle Peralta from our office is up on the screen there. She is the staff member for this committee, along with the legislative committee, works with me in helping to ensure that when this committee has to meet, that those meetings run smoothly.
Thank you. Any citizens' comments? Hearing none. I have no comments. Any communications? We need approval of the minutes of the previous meeting, which was held. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. Number five is the six is the resolution regarding the county board meeting location. Terry Rose, you're up.
You need to turn the mic on. Press the button still.
Yes, not. All right, we'll try again. Does that work? Okay. All right, Supervisor Nudo and I have offered this resolution for your consideration this evening. I know we've been meeting here theoretically because of its size. We had met at the county board room. I think the thing I think we ought to really seriously consider is what is the safest place to meet? And I think that's the county board room. Very few people are there during the week, if any. Perhaps one of us passes through, but largely it is unoccupied. It is maintained spotlessly, not to suggest that this is not maintained, but all kinds of people wander through this building from Illinois, from Kenosha, from elsewhere, using the washrooms, the general room here. And if you're concerned, first of all, about safety, the county board room on the third floor is, I think, unquestionably safer. It's the traditional place where we meet. I think it's the place where we should continue to meet. Very seldom do we have a large group of citizens who are interested in an agenda item. That comes about when there's something extremely controversial, such as that civil rights resolution. That is a rare meeting indeed. Those are the kind of meetings that where you can accommodate by having people sign up and speak and wait in the hallway if that becomes the issue. Or they can do as suggested on the agenda. This is an open meeting and they can submit remarks through the county clerk, as has been done here, I think, rather effectively. So I am also concerned as to how long are we going to meet here, and why are we going to continue to meet here? So I've offered this, as Supervisor Nudo has, to suggest that once again we return to the county board chambers. That's the place that is designated. It's a good symbolic move that we're leading the way here, and I think it's time to do that.
I do. Would we still have social distancing where some of the supervisors would have to sit in the queue-like seats without desks?
Well, we did that before. That is true.
Wouldn't that make it kind of cumbersome for the supervisors that are trying to look through multiple budget documents, sitting in those seats without any kind of space to put their laptop on, their budget documents? It would would be kind of logistics that wouldn't work very well.
Perhaps a room could be rearranged as well.
I'm not going to be supporting this for the reason of A, we have plenty of space in here versus, as Supervisor Belsky just mentioned, having to sit in the pews. I was one of those that had to sit in the pews, and it was not not a good situation when trying to look over stuff. Being here, again, we have plenty of space. We're spaced out. I have the utmost amount of respect and faith in our staff that are coming in and cleaning up behind us. As you saw, they were cleaning up in between meetings today. And when it comes to worrying about safety, we're talking about worrying about safety, yet we didn't support, as a whole, didn't support virtual, and some of us aren't even wearing masks. So, I mean, I don't see the safety aspect of it being included in it. So I will not be supporting.
I'm thinking about when we do the budget here, when the finance does the budget hearings, there's 20 people and staff and everything fitting into the small room. There's no social distancing at all. We're in there like sardines. How are we going? Where are we going to do? Here we can spread out a bit. How would we be able to do that in any room down in the administration building and do that any effectively? That's at least that week of hearings, that's where it's going to be very difficult. And the second question I have is, there been any changes to the room to where maybe something's been put up separating plastic or anything, where separating the supervisors or separating the pews or anything? Has any change been done to the room at all?
I've looked into having the desks moved. It's impossible to move them. So it makes it very difficult to social distance supervisors from each other without that floor plan that we had before. And that doesn't allow for any space then for any public to come in. That makes it a little difficult.
Yeah, does anybody, any other? I don't want to steal anything.
I didn't, when this resolution was brought forward and I started doing my homework on it, it wasn't a safety thing that came to my attention. I think there's a certain humility and being humble and prestigious to those chambers. And I think based on some of our recent meetings, we've lost some of that. And I think that eventually we're going to need to go back, and I mean, at what point do you stop running from what's going on here? And that's a question everybody has to answer, and everybody has their own opinions, and I'm not trying to force mine on any. But I did have a colleague mention to me the people sitting in the pews, and that kind of changed my mind. I'm a paper guy, a note taker. I would be lost sitting in a pew trying to figure out especially at budget time. So if this would have passed this committee and come to the board floor, I would have supported it, and I will continue to support moving back. But I think this should be delayed till after budget time so that we can use the desks here and spread out and deal with it. But at some point we need to move back to our chambers, and we can't continue to try to run from this. And that's my opinion. I will either bring this up or support this resolution after the budget hearing, but we're going to have to go to our seats because I don't think it's right to put members in the pews and that type of thing. So those are my thoughts on it. My opinion, you could take it or leave it, but I think this would be better served looked at after budget time, and I will support it then. But now I think we need the room. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, technically there is no motion yet. I don't believe the resolution was moved.
I move the resolution, Mr. Chairman. Roll call.
No.
Hey.
Aye.
Hey.
If you take a look at this resolution, it's kind of a technical resolution dealing with this issue of sovereign immunity, and that's really the crux of it all. Probably a lot of people don't realize that the issue of sovereign immunity every time you deal with an Indian nation is a paramount issue. Right now, we have no authority to tax a Indian tribe unless they agree to it. We're not a party to this dairy land development. That's something that's strictly between the city and the developers. There are a number of parties involved. This Majestic Realty, they are an entity, I believe, that was formulated by the Potawatomi. Are there other partners involved in that Majestic Realty? I couldn't get a definite answer from the city attorney when I talked to Mr. Knight today. I asked him that question. And why is that important? Because the law that we have an opinion on from Perkins and Co. says that entities created by an Indian tribe also have sovereign immunity if they so choose to assert that as a defense. How does that make a difference to us as a county? Well, it means that if they don't want to pay taxes and haven't waived sovereign immunity, there's nothing we can do about that. And that's why I raised this issue originally with the mayor, and then the county executive met with the chairman, myself, corporation council, and to discuss that issue. Because if we're not parties to that agreement, unless the Indian tribe is willing to waive it, I think at some point in the future, we might very well have difficulty collecting taxes from them. Now, what's the position of the city involved in this? And I had a conversation with both the mayor and Mr. Knight this afternoon. They want very much that this development go through. Perhaps a little too much. I mean, this is very valuable land. If this group of developers doesn't develop it, I think somebody else will. But they're very eager and anxious, so they recognize the issue, but they're trying to say and solve it by having a deed restriction that says the land should always be taxable. And they believe that that would solve the problem. I don't think that necessarily solves the problem. And Joe Cardamone submitted this to council this afternoon late because we received it very late from the city. Because there's really no definite answer here. One can argue either way. And when you got an argument either way, what you have involved is a lawsuit. And I don't think we're looking for a lawsuit. So how does this come to us here this evening? Well, it comes to us in the form of this resolution that says, unless the Indian tribe waives sovereign immunity, we're not going to support it when the TIF district is created. We have two representatives on that committee. Is it one, Joe? One. That's our finance director. And this would instruct her to vote against the creation of a TIF district unless the Potawatomis were agreeable to waive sovereign immunity as to both the city and the county. To date, they're not willing to do that. And they're only willing to put this deed restriction in I think the issue could be very easily solved by them waiving sovereign immunity. They won't. What does that tell you? It tells you that in the future you might have a problem. And how might that problem develop itself? Well, it could easily develop itself in the form of some future administration of the Potawatomi tribe says, well, we've got to cut costs in the future. We want to increase profits. And the way to do it is decrease expenses, such as paying cities and counties their taxes. And we're not going to pay the taxes. And then we get into a long drawn out expensive lawsuit on sovereign immunity and the fact that the county was never aggrieved, was never a party to this lawsuit. And you've got a bunch of complexities that I don't think that we should buy into for the future. Thus, the resolution this evening. I'm moving the motion.
Yeah. Supervisor Rose.
Yeah.
Also with sovereign immunity, do we also lose a say so on what can go on that property as well? If so, that's from my understanding from going back to the Menominee tribe when they waived it, is at least when they waived, we could, the city and the county had a say so what went into that property.
Correct.
By them not waiving it, something 30, 40 years down the road, we may not have a say so what goes on one of the most valuable pieces of land in our county. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, this was a big issue in the casino debate a number of years ago. Menominees did agree to waive that at the time.
Can you hear me? Is this thing functioning properly?
Yeah.
Good. Fantastic. Glad to hear that. I tend to support the proposition set forth by Supervisor Rose, and I think that the city's proposition of coming up with just kind of a short-term solution that could be challenged in court and ultimately overturned is not the way to go. I mean, we're supposed to be looking into the future. We're supposed to be looking into the crystal ball and saying what we see and doing our best to make sure that we don't have issues down the road. They were willing to waive immunity in the past. Supervisor Frederick makes a very good point in terms of ultimate usage of that property. So if we're going to do it, you know, this is our kick at the can. Let's do it right and ask them, I mean, if they're willing partners and they want to see this thing go through, they should certainly be able to do that again. So that's my position. Thank you.
I am 100% in agreement with Supervisor Rose on this. Unless they could come up with some form of signed legal documentation that they're going to waive that immunity, and even that, I would need to be briefed on. My recollection is the same as Boyd's, which I'm getting older and it might be less, but I think that, you know, what happens if they build multifamily units there and they all go to heck in a handbasket and they've declared, you know, that it's, you know, tribal land. Can we do anything about it? My answer to that would be no. So I think when you enter into one of these, I'm all for development and getting it going, but we need to make sure that. And I don't know how much leverage the county has, but I certainly would use every ounce of what we have to say no until it's done right. And if through the chair to Joe, to Mr. Cardabone, have they produced any type of legal documentation that they would waive that immunity or how that would be moving forward?
With the strong caveat that the negotiations between the tribe or the developer and the tribe have been with the city. And so I've only been provided with documents from the city. The short answer to your question is no. They've provided a letter indicating that they would intend for the property to remain taxable for the life of the TID. They've talked about a language for the developer's agreement that would say that they would consider themselves to be subject to the laws of the state of Wisconsin as it regards to taxation, tax foreclosures, special assessments, et cetera, and they've proposed language for a deed restriction saying that the property would remain taxable. But the opinion that we're receiving from outside counsel, which is the same counsel that we used for the casino negotiations a decade ago, is that they don't believe that that is sufficient, and they certainly don't believe it's sufficient to protect us, as we are not a party to those agreements.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for us to get any type of protection, but I also think we should weigh in and not support anything that doesn't have a legally binding, you know, a sovereign immunity clause. And what you said just scared me. Okay, they're going to leave it taxable through the life of the TID, through the life of the TID district. Well, that's going to run out in 20 years. So in 20 years, when we're not around, all of a sudden it slides over to tribal lands, and then what happens? See, that this whole thing needs to be thought through. And I remember when they were doing the casino in the past, and there was all kinds of meetings and things were brought out and discussed. And this almost seems like a, you know, slide it in around the horn type thing. And I'm not accusing the city of doing that, but I'm just saying I'm not comfortable without having the interests of our taxpayers protected. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Got a point of information. Through the chair to either Supervisor Rose or Councilor Cardamone, when we talk about a tribe waiving immunity, is that a general type thing, or is that specific to each individual entity within a document, you know, namely taxation, namely this, that, or the other thing? Can someone please respond to that?
I think it's specific. So it's specific to the county that they would agree to pay taxes, special assessments. And if you are a contractor, a service provider, anybody doing business with a tribe in the future, you have got to make very sure that they waive it in your contract. Otherwise, and there's case law, Wisconsin Supreme Court case law clearly says you don't waive. They haven't waived it in your contract, and they don't want to pay you. They don't have to pay you if they assert sovereign immunity. So what we're talking about this evening in the resolution is as to the county only. If one wanted to add and others doing business with them in the city or county of Kenosha, that would be in addition to this.
And Cardamone, is that your impression as well?
It is my impression as well, with the strong caveat that I am obviously not an expert in this particular area of law, but that is my understanding as well, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mike, thanks. Can you hear me?
Okay.
I need to be educated on this, but I assume that sovereign, still can't hear me. Oh, okay. I thought you were coming over. I was under the impression that sovereign immunity only applied to, native lands, like their own reservation, not land that they don't, is not part of their reservation. Is that not true?
I think that's the issue here. Is this going to be transferred to the Indian Trust in the future? There's nothing that says that will not be. We can't stop them. I say, how would this come about? Majestic Realty conveys it to XYZ Corporation. 6-10 years from now, they decide to cut costs. And how do they cut costs? Well, they transfer it to the trust, and now you're out of luck.
Theoretically, then, that land could become, the dog park could become Indian land in the future.
It could. Okay. I mean, there's nothing to prevent.
So the sovereign immunity could move its all over depending on what property they buy. It's not narrowly confined to their own reservation.
And the opinion that we had from Perkins and Cole, and Joe, you can correct me if I don't state this accurately, is that sovereign immunity extends to entities created by the tribe. Thus, it would extend under that theory to Majestic Realty.
It was certainly their opinion that at best it was a not wholly answered question, and that it was something that could be asserted. Whether or not a court would agree with the assertion, I think was unclear.
One other question: that land abuts my district, and it's been sitting vacant for 11 years. It's quite an eyesore, and I probably can see why the city is motivated to get something in there soon. What's the Corp Council or Supervisor Rose? What's the city's argument? Why are they so convinced that this agreement is sufficient in spite of waiving sovereign immunity?
I don't know that I can answer that question, Supervisor. While I've had some brief conversations with one of my counterparts at the city, we haven't gotten deeply into these issues. I don't know if they've consulted with outside counsel the way that we have. I believe that they are taking at face value the assertions and the statements being made by the tribe on behalf of the tribe that they intend to keep the land as taxable. They do not intend to enroll it in the trust program to make it tribal lands, and that the language that's being proposed would be sufficient to protect the interests of others. And again, I guess I have to say primarily the city, because they're the other party. But it's the assurances that are being provided. They are choosing to accept it at face value. And I'm not saying that that's right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying I believe that that is the city's approach.
Yeah, it just would have been nice to have some from the city hear their perspective on this, just to hear the counter argument.
Chair, if I may.
I'm done. Thank
you. I called Matt Knight today too because I had several questions. And he sent me a declaration of restrictions. And from his perspective, whether it's right or wrong, they feel that the declaration of restrictions covers all of their concerns. That's the answer that I received. So be that as it may.
Well, the point, though, I think is that nobody can say for sure whether or not sovereign immunity is going to be a defense in the future to some sort of litigation, and that you're really buying litigation because there's no case law that answers that question. And I talked to Matt Knight as well, and you know, he's satisfied with it, but he nor I nor Joe Cardamone nor Perkins and Cole can say for sure who's going to win that lawsuit. It'd be so simple. Why isn't the tribe waive sovereign immunity as to the Kenosha County? Solve problem solved. Answer, they won't.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.